Welcome back to the show, everybody, or welcome to it. 8:16 here on a Wednesday morning with J.R. Simmer and Hammer. Another smoky day, and there is Paul Maurice. I believe that was just before the Panthers jumped on the plane from Vegas to head to Florida and back home, as he said. Different crowd reaction. We'll see tomorrow night in Sunrise. Panthers need it. They need some help. Down 2-0 in the Stanley Cup Final. Vegas is in the driver's seat. And again, history sort of speaks for itself on this when teams go up 2-0. 48-5 over NHL history. The team that's up 2-0 in the final goes on to win, and it's 31-3 when we're talking about the team that wins the first two games, and they're at home as well. Yeah. So Vegas in the driver's seat, but you're never in trouble until you lose a home game. Blah, 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 blah. Game three tomorrow night.
Yeah, exactly. And I also, I hate to get into the old cliches, but the starts for the Panthers and getting some saves. I mean, all those things that we talk about, hey, they're not even getting out of the first round if it's not for Bobrovsky, JR. They're probably all looking for jobs. I mean, that's how much of a difference he's made, and the difference in his play, which has been a drop so far in the series, has been huge.
They'll need a back to the top of his game, Sergei Bobrovsky, for sure. Game three again tomorrow night at 8 and here on TSN 1200. Let's welcome to the show our TSN hockey analyst, Dave Poulin. As always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Doing very well, guys. I'm having to be at the top of my game. I got a major trade here to digest. I got a lot going on in the golf world I'm trying to figure out. And I've got the Stanley Cup Finals still pressing. So you have to be really sharp early on a Wednesday morning with everything going on.
Absolutely. Let's get a quick thought from you, because you are a huge golfer and golf fan. And like everybody who's kind of emotionally invested in the sport, what was your level of surprise, A, to the news of yesterday of the merger? And what do you make of it all?
I was as shocked as the players were, and I had a chance. I was in the car, and so I had a chance to listen to Sirius Radio, and the guys, Colton Nost, does a great job there with that late morning show, and they were literally calling his buddies and golfers, and they were finding out for the first time. And so Stuart Sink, like big guys, and Scott Stallings, and they agreed to come on the radio not knowing anything, like nothing. So it was raw and emotion, and it was reminiscent to me, guys, of the through the 80s, the labor situations we dealt with and the lockouts that we dealt with, because the lack of communication then went, like, all the information went to one player rep, and then it was up to him to call the guys on the team and let them know what was going on. And talk about feeling like we were in the dark. And even in 93, when we were with you, Simmer, in Washington, we would, you know, now some guys chose not to even live there at that point. They were still at their summer homes. If you had kids, they were in school, so you were there through the fall. And we would get together in the morning, not knowing at all what was coming in the call. About were we going to work? Were we not going to work? Would we go to the gym? Would we go to the golf course? What would happen? And there'd be like eight of us huddled around a call waiting to see what happened. That's what it felt like, but it's 2023. And it felt like the news coming out yesterday was so shocking to that group. And the players only meeting in Oakdale would have been fascinating, guys. And there's still so much more to come out here on what the situation is. But the commissioner himself, I think what is coming out is that he's the CEO of the new entity. And by the way, it's an LLC, guys. So that poises its limited liability corporation. It's not a not-for-profit organization. So this poses as potentially, this could be a public company that they've created. So there's a lot of information still coming out. So, and I will get over to the Canadian Open at some point and absorb some of the actual golf going on in Toronto.
Yeah, and we're going to hear from Rory McIlroy apparently in a little over an hour or so from now. That's, I think, the one person in all of this that everybody's most keen to hear. All right, let's turn our attention to hockey. And before we get to your thoughts on where we're at with the Stanley Cup Final, as you said, you're digesting a pretty significant trade yesterday, a three-way trade in which Columbus ends up with Provorov, Philadelphia ends up with futures, and LA ends up with cap space. Am I simplifying things too much, or is that the deal?
No, you are exactly dead on with that. And so it's a preview of what LA is going to be able to do with that money. And they've already, you know, it looks like they'll renew Gavrikov, so their defense position. Well, they did have a surplus of defense. That was the Sean Walker coming out, you know, a serviceable 28-year-old. for Philly, I think this is really significant. There's a couple parts of this, guys. Let's start in Columbus because theirs is the cleanest. They get a first. They get Provorov. There was always in that draft a Provorov bent to Mike Babcock when he was in Toronto. Apparently, that was the D that he really liked in that draft, and they would have taken Martin. There was a lot of talk about Hanifin that Toronto liked. You know, they needed a defenseman. They ended up taking Marner, which looks obviously like the right choice. But Provorov was taken in that same draft. And so Babcock ends up with him. Now, I say Babcock ends up with him because just in a little side digression here, I think there are going to be a lot of trades. We've talked about that. The UFA market is thin. I think there's going to be significant trades and trading partners through this next stretch, through the draft and through early July. I think coaches are going to be involved in this situation. I think Babcock would clearly have been involved yesterday if he did, in fact, like Provorov. I think John Tortorella's got his stamp on this in a big way with a rookie president and a rookie GM. So I think he's got a big stamp in this. We're hearing that Mike Sullivan, that in this new Pittsburgh configuration, I've told you from day one, I think that Kyle Dubas does maintain a share of the GM seat. Mike Sullivan has his stamp on Pittsburgh, apparently, moving forward. And a guy trying to get into the league, Patrick Waugh, got out of the league because he wanted a bigger stamp on player personnel. So that's kind of a trend I think we're going to see more of in a coach when he's negotiating, is he's going to want power in player personnel.
I was going to say, based on so much video being done over the years, Pooley, are the coaches more in touch with the actual players nowadays than maybe they were 30 years ago?
I think they'll argue that, and it's not why I wouldn't want them involved in the conversation, like in the final say. It's because of their emotional attachment to the players and the fact that you've been in a coach's office, Simmer, after a game when the coach is trying to trade nine guys because he's so mad at them, and you can't have that. Now, do I want a coach's input? Absolutely, but I still have to have a final say. It can't be a coach who's constructing a hockey team because he doesn't see teams as much as, and video doesn't do it as much as guys sitting in the stands. So I think this is a kickoff to a lot that's going to happen, guys, a lot. And in Philly restocking, they get a first rounder and a couple of second rounders out of it. And you're exactly right the way you broke it down. LA poised short term to get cap space and go with it. And I think this is just the start of it. I really do. I think there's going to be a market there like we haven't seen in the last couple of years.
With Provorov and now rumors about Hart, is this a clear sign Philly is really going into the true rebuild, almost like we saw here in Ottawa?
It is, and they've said it's, you know, the way they've termed it, they didn't say it wasn't a rebuild or a retool. They said it's not a fire sale, and there's a difference, right? And they're selling, and I think it is going to be a little bit of scorched earth there, which very intriguing to see how a John Tortorella would handle that. But obviously he's got it. I think he's got a stamp on this trade, guys. I do. I think he's got a guy in Provorov who they didn't think was happy in Philadelphia, and they moved him out of there.
Where you're at with Carter Hart? There was a time when he came into the NHL when a lot of people thought this is the best young goalie prospect in the game. It's been kind of a roller coaster for him in Philly. The team hasn't been very good for a lot of it as well. If you are a team that was in the market for a goaltender, would he be a player you'd go after, even though the price may be significant?
He would absolutely be a player I would go after. And this is back to the article I wrote maybe 2 or 3 months ago about goaltenders and how hard it is to draft and develop them, along with your timing of when you think you're going to be good and how you're as well off to just time your good team and then go out and find a goalie. And, you know, if we look at the goalies that have had success even this year in the final eight of the Stanley Cup playoffs, they're all guys that were acquired in some fashion other than arguably Jake Oettinger and Stuart Skinner. And everybody else was acquired in some sort of trade or free agency or that according to the timing of where your team is at. You know, if you'd say Ottawa right now is coming up on the cusp of something that could be significantly, you know, in a winning way for their team, and you would say, okay, could we draft a really good goaltender this year? There's a great prospect. He's on your table in the first round. He lines up with the number of pick that you have. When is he going to be ready? 4 years from now? 5 years from now? that doesn't fit exactly what you want to do with this team. So that's where I think, you know, you'd look if you were, would I be interested in Carter Hart? Absolutely. 24 years old, enough of a pedigree, enough balance. He's played 200 games in the NHL, guys. He's only 24 years old, and that's very young. And I've seen enough that I would say, would I be interested in exactly the, you know, the model that I talked about acquiring a goalie for the timing in my team? Carter Hart would be very high on the list.
Carter Hart was a member of the 2018 World Junior Team for Canada that we obviously know still remains under investigation. Do you believe that if and when any trade happens for him, it will have to be that no team would trade for him until that whole issue is solved and we find out what the NHL, what police are going to do in that case?
I believe that is close to being resolved, so it may be a moot point because I believe that the league has completed their investigation and is going to come forward with that investigation very soon. So it may be a moot point, but it could be a factor, JR, yes.
Pooley, on Carter Hart, 1 year, and then he's a restricted free agent. Are you comfortable giving him a long-term deal, at, I guess, north of $6 million or whatever he fits in? Because I'm assuming if you're making that trade, you're giving up a lot, and I'm assuming you're going to want to lock him up.
You are, and I think right now it could still be a little bit on your terms, Simmer. You know, he's at a point right now. I mean, he was one game under 500 last year with a shaky Philadelphia team. There, he had his moments, but it might be a good time to lock him up. You know, it might be a time where, you know, you could use it in your favor and say, we have a player right now that may look at and value, you know, a security much different than he would have, you know, 2 years ago or 3 years ago when everybody thought he was going to be a Carey Price type of goaltender.
You mentioned that you think this is going to be a very busy month and maybe a busy summer for trades. Is part of the reasoning for that the general, you know, you mentioned a thin UFA group, but also that other general managers will look at, it's a copycat league. You got Vegas that has never hesitated to make trades and big moves. You got Florida that, you know, traded a 115-point player and also a really good defenseman in Kenzie Weegar and a first-rounder and brought Matthew Tkachuk back. You got those two teams playing in the final. And the general managers would look and go, you know, you can stand pat all you want and hope that it gets better, or you can just be bold and make a trade. Do you think that other general managers are seeing what's happened with Vegas and Florida and thinking, maybe I should be thinking that way too?
Yes, I do. I do. And you can talk about draft and develop, and it's got to be a portion of it. And if you're looking at a, you know, I mean, what would be the standard, build a corporation on a chair with four legs and you need all four of the legs to be equal strength. Draft and develop, absolutely one of the components. But because of the timing of draft and development and the uncertainty of when a player is going to come to fruition, you can't solely rely on that. You simply can't. You have to inject, in order to maximize your draft and develop players, you have to inject the right amount of leadership and experience, and look no further than Claude Giroux and the timing of what he might have done for a Timmy Stutzler or Josh Norris or whomever, or Brady Tkachuk for that matter, bringing another cat into the room. So you need all four of those legs, JR, to be significant. It's not balanced. That it's not a, you know, a tripod chair, and it's not. You need trades. You need draft and develop. You need free agents. You need all of the components in order to make a team in the Stanley Cup right now. And if you break down, you know, from the six players taken in the expansion draft to Vegas and the fact that they've sustained, you know, for six full years, so there's some consistency there in their group. But even Mark Stone's been there 4.5 years now. So, you know, those guys, you know, that's a group that has been built by a hockey mind in Kelly McCrimmon and certainly a hockey mind in George McPhee. And that's the way it's got to happen, I believe. It's not solely one avenue that you can take right now to be successful in the NHL.
How many owners are asking that question, Pooley? Why is Seattle so good so quick? We're going through all this draft and development and all these lottery picks, and teams like Edmonton and Toronto haven't won squat.
Well, it's a clean slate theory, and that's what, you know, teams would try and do, right? That's what Toronto tried to do, was clean the slate down to as close to, you know, in 2015, as close to an expansion model as you could get. Now, you don't have the benefit of being able to take the, you know, sixth or seventh best player from each team, but you do have a clean slate. And the clean slate's an important part of this equation. and you look at Vegas and you look at Seattle, and it's a clean slate. And then you go out. And by the way, Seattle's been pretty aggressive in the trade market as well. You think of guys like Bjorkstrand and free agency with Barkovsky. They've added to that mix of that original year already and will continue to do so.
There's lots of talk that Alex DeBrincat is potentially a trade chip for Ottawa, be it now, be it in the summer, maybe into next season. If the best trade for Alex DeBrincat is in division, and, you know, he's from Michigan guy, a lot of people say Detroit, but whatever. If the best trade is in division, do you have any hesitation in trading him in division?
Yeah, I'd have to know a little bit more about what's coming back, but no, I don't. If I'm going to make the best deal for my hockey team, I'm not worried about that. I'm not. And, you know, providing it's the best offer that I'm presented with. Yep. And I think you've got to get by that. I think that's what holds up a lot of trades, JR, is the fear. You have to have enough confidence in your group to say what we're bringing back fits our hockey team better. It may not be a better player. It may be a different player that fits our hockey team better for what we want to do. You have to have the confidence to do it, and with the trading partner that is the trading partner, not according to where they're situated geographically.
The sign and trade, or the kind of one-for-one pooling, I go back to Hossa for Heatley, very difficult to do. Is the more likely scenario, if they're selling off DeBrincat now, is that they're getting futures back with the hope they can turn around and use those futures to augment the team right now?
Well, maybe multi-team deal. And we just watched a deal with Columbus and LA and Philly that worked because there was a third team involved that needed cap space, right? That's the only reason it worked. And so it may be a multi-team situation, Simmer, that makes that happen. Or simultaneous trade, where I trade with you, then I trade with somebody else, and not even call it a three-way deal. You know, might be separated by a little bit of time, but it might be in the hopper before the first deal is made. So yes, and that's the communication part. I think that's so important, and why GMs spend as much time on the phone as they do, because there's always a seed planted. I'm asking about a guy 3 years before I think I might be able to trade for him. I just am, you know, and I'm always letting people know that I'm interested in that person. If, and it's always qualified, right? Oh, he's not available, JR. But hey, by the way, if you're ever trading Zimmer, mm-hmm. you know, I know that I might be interested in acquiring him.
Zimmer's always on the table.
Yeah. JR doesn't know I know she didn't know trade. Don't even come to me.
I didn't dare ask for Hammer. I'm smarter than that.
Oh, man.
There you go. All right. Stanley Cup final resumes tomorrow night. Vegas is up 2-0 after a pretty lopsided Game 2 victory. Is the series over? It's just a matter of games, or what?
I don't think so. I think there's been enough in Florida. They did have to catch their breath, clearly. They've got to clean some stuff up. They've got to clean up the rush, guys. They've got to clean up what Vegas has been able to do on the rush, and that's through the neutral zone. They have to tighten up through the neutral zone. But, you know, we'll know pretty early in Game 3, I think. But I don't think it is. I think they can dial it up and make a series of it. Vegas looks so good and so deep. And you know, when we talked before the series, I said Vegas is the better team. But Florida has to somehow find a way to recreate the magic that made a lot of teams pick them before the series started. Right now, it's not magic. It's just not. It looks like a team that's grasping. And taking bad penalties early to start is everything for them tonight and in their home building. And they can't take a penalty 7 minutes in. You know, they can't. A needless retaliation penalty, and that's what that was. Simply a retaliation penalty, and all of a sudden they're down 1-0. They can't do that. They have to be tight from a discipline standpoint.
Isn't it funny, though, Pooley? I mean, come on. The highlights from Boston, from Toronto, Carolina, almost all those chances Bob were making were off odd man rushes going
Absolutely.
From his left to right. Like, are the Florida, I guess my question, are the Florida Panthers really doing anything different, or are they just not getting the saves?
Oh, I don't think they're playing as effectively as they were. They were getting the saves, but yeah. I don't think they were.
But there were a lot of great chances that he made saves on.
There were, yeah. But it wasn't flowing as easily through the middle of the ice and up ice. And I think that's what I'm alluding to, the fact that, you know, I mean, it has to be a little bit slower pace or a more aggressive forecheck that keeps Vegas in their end a little bit more.
Two keys for Florida getting as far as they have. One was Bobrovsky that you guys have talked about. The other has been Matthew Tkachuk. In your estimation through the first two games, has he been sidetracked maybe a little too much with message sending, face washing, punching guys in the head, etc., and not enough about kind of the offensive side of the game? Or Is it just not working right now and he just should continue as is?
Vegas' credit, it's not working. But they lay a foundation early in a series that has a cumulative effect, and they haven't been able to do that. They simply haven't. Like, no one's wondering if Sam Bennett's going to run them over. And I think in the other series, there was a cumulative effect, particularly in Toronto, that you know, those guys got hit so much early, they didn't want to get hit anymore. And that hasn't happened. It simply hasn't. And so I think that, you know, Tkachuk has not been the timely performer he has been through the playoffs, but there's other, you can point all the way around the board. Montour has been, from an offensive standpoint, was such a factor early, particularly against Boston. I mean, he was a monster. You know, at one point, I think he had 9 points in 8 games, and I think he's got 9 points right now, right? So it's just quieted down for him, and there were so many different things working in Florida's favor. And, you know, they're not deep enough to lose a Lewis Drainan. And you might say, come on, Lewis Drainan is a third-line player, but he balanced out the third line. He let Ryan Lomborg play on the fourth line. Lomborg is not a third-line player. Now you start moving pieces around, and you can see, okay, it's not as effective.
Not the biggest D crew in Florida, and certainly not the most physical. How much of a loss will Gudas be, Pooley, if he's out?
Enormous, both mentally and physically, for that group. Because when you look at the right side of the D, Simmer, and you said, okay, you know, oh, geez, you know, I got to worry about Ekblad. He's 6'4". He's not a crushing physical player, but he can go offensively, so I'm aware of where he is. Next shift up, Montour. Where is he? He's all over the ice. I got to skate. I got to cover defensively. Then you go out and you're lined up against Gudas, and I would just raise my head a little bit, note who's on right D, and say, man, I better keep my head up when I'm out here. Like, that was Scott Stevens, right? I would look up, and I'd see Stevens lined up with the left D, and he'd have that little smirk on his face. He'd be looking right at me, and I'd say, yeah, by the way, my controlled entry doesn't happen to be on your side of the ice, okay? And that's what Gudas does. And he's the spirit of him. You could see. So he misses almost the entire warm-up, and then comes out and lays 2 huge hits early in the game, and then gets crushed by Barbashev, just crushed. And the guys, you knew he was crushed because he didn't stop at the melee that broken out post. Yeah. He went straight to the bench, and it's the first invitation he's ever turned down since like that 1st of July party 4 years ago. Like, he doesn't turn down invites. And so it's a big loss if he's not available to play.
All right. We'll perhaps find out more on that today. Game 3 goes tomorrow night in Florida with the Panthers down 2-0. Always appreciate the time and the insight, Pooley. Look forward to talking to you, I guess, on Friday. We'll know where the series is. Is it a series, or is it about to become perhaps a Vegas sweep? We'll talk again on Friday. Thanks for the time this morning.
Enjoy the hockey. Enjoy the golf, gentlemen.
Bet and Breakfast, powered by FanDuel.
Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today and find thousands of ways to wager. Please play responsibly. 19 plus and physically located in Ontario.
All right, welcome back. 8:48. Go 3 for 3 last night, Simmer, with the FanDuel picks?
No, 2 for 3.
No. Because you went with the, what's the first pitch of the game going to be?
Well, pretty limited. Yeah, pretty limited slate on, I guess I could get into some of the other props, but yeah.
Get into a million things.
That's true. That's
the great thing about the FanDuel app. Now, the second pitch of the game was a home run.
Yeah.
I go back, and what are the odds of, if you had a bet on that, like if the first pitch of the game was a home run. Anyway, we digress. You picked the Jays behind Gosman.
Yeah.
And you picked the under as well.
I
correct
did,
in that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
2 for 3,
yeah,
which allows you to continue.
Yeah, exactly.
We do have game 3 of the NBA Finals tonight. Denver in Miami. The Nuggets are actually favored on the road by 2.5. The over-under on this game is 214 and a half. What do you like?
I'm going to take the Nuggets, not just to win, but to cover as well, Jer. I am a little surprised at that one, with the difference of being 8. I know it's on the road, but I don't think that factor. And I think they're going to clean up their game and play a lot better tonight.
Okay.
Also going to take a, what's the over-under?
214 and a half.
Yeah, I really think we're going to
see the games so far have been 219 and 22. So the last one was 219. I think the other one was, I got to remember what it was, 104.93. So it was well under.
I think it'll be a little cleaner tonight as well. So I'll take the under on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And you want to go Jays as well?
Yeah. And I'm going to take the Jays to win. I think they're favored by, is it -130? But I'm just going to take an outright win for the Jays tonight.
Okay. Let me just get on that. They are -156.
Okay.
Okay. That.
Yeah. No, just want just a straight out win.
Okay. $10 parlay on that, my friend, pays $45.67.
Oh, nice.
So the Nuggets.
Yeah.
given 2.5.
Yeah.
The under of 214.5.
Yeah.
And the Jays to win outright tonight. By the way, it is... Who's throwing for the Jays tonight?
Bassett, I think.
Oh, it's Bassett. Just back from paternity leave.
Exactly.
Was that the first child for him? There was a big deal about on Friday. He was pitching at New York. Mm-hmm. The game was rain delayed. His wife had gone into labor. Mm-hmm. As soon as he was pulled from the game, he was gonna. I think they'd put him on a private jet, right, to go mm-hmm. back so he could be there for the birth of the child. The game was delayed by rain. Mm-hmm. Anyway, apparently he did make it back in time for the birth of his son yesterday. But he's back from paternity leave and will pitch tonight. And he's been, by and large... So Gosman's been awesome, and Bassett's been pretty good as well.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Second kid?
Second child.
Okay. All right, there you go. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today and make every moment more from the opening time line to the final score. Please play responsibly, 19+, and physically located in Ontario. So Rory McIlroy is going to meet with the media in Toronto this morning, originally scheduled for about 9:30. It's now been moved up to 9 o'clock. So we're going to bring that to you live here on TSN 1200. I think... Even if you're not really a golf fan, but you're fascinated by the story, the person you want to hear from, even more than Jay Monahan, as he said, as he anointed himself, hypocrite, is Rory McIlroy, because that's the guy that stood up for the tour. He's the guy that turned down, after Tiger, the most money to jump over to live, he's the guy that got, I'm sure, blindsided as much as anybody else yesterday by the announcement of the merger between the two. So we're going to hear from Rory McIlroy coming up in about 10 minutes or so, and we'll bring it to you live here on TSN 1200.
Yeah, very interesting, JR, and again, recognizing, and I know they were talking about trying to get Jay Monahan to resign, you are now working for a private company, completely different ballgame, and Royal McIlroy is getting paychecks now directly from Saudi Arabia. So what kind of a stance? And as much as I appreciated what he was doing, JR, if you're really going to hold to your stance, do you walk away from the tour? I mean, it must have him in a very, very, that's a real dilemma. And I'm not saying he's going to, but it's really, he's been put in an awful spot here, you know, for standing up for the PGA Tour. So be very curious to see what he has to say.
Unsigned on text, right? Shouldn't the big question about the merger be, how does Jay Monahan have the authority to make a deal like that without consulting the Tour Policy Board? If Phil and Dustin and the boys got $150 to $200 million to jump to live, how much did Jay get to hand over the entire tour, writes Unsigned. Apparently, he's getting a $7.5 million bump as he's now become the CEO of the new entity. Saudi fella, whose name I don't remember, is the chairman of the board.
Okay.
And part of this deal as well, and again, there's many, many layers to it, is the fact that the PGA does retain voting rights. Mm-hmm. So any changes that are contemplated, it will be the existing PGA Tour that kind of has a yay or nay. Yeah. But as we ultimately know, the chairman can supersede what a board wants. So
yeah, I guess it's whatever the structure is, JR. I was surprised. Now, people have to remember that the players on the golf tour are nothing but more than contractors, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they have no rights. And as you said, I'm sure they'll spark up a union. The other thing I'd look for, I wonder if the LIV golfers are going to strike if having to play four rounds now. I mean, that is not in my
and
contract.
And wear pants again.
That is
Can't wear shorts.
That is not in my contract. So, oh, man, I just, guys, Phil Mickelson at this point in his career is walking into the room. And what did he get? Like $200 million?
So he got, I was unsure, and I saw some people talking about this yesterday. Yeah, so it was $200 million to go to live. Now, he didn't get all $200 million up front, according to the stories yesterday. Yeah. He got, it appears to be a $100
million
up front. And then the rest was to be divided over the years of the contract. They all signed contracts.
Yeah,
and his contract is believed to be 3 years. So he was getting $33 million a year. So he probably got, the conjecture is, Phil, $133 million through the 1 year that he's been with Liv. And I guess maybe this year will count as well because they are going to finish the season. So let's put it at around $150 million. Dollars, and it would appear like he is going to be able to probably pay some sort of penalty, some payback, probably not that much. And he'll be back on the whatever the new tour is named. It's going to have a new name.
Yeah,
well.
I think it's safe to say the rest of his career, he would not have even come close to that in earnings share.
No, he's 53 years old.
Exactly.
Not even close. Anyway, okay, so we're going to hear from Rory coming up at the top of the hour. I just wanted to bring up this because he's celebrating his 23rd birthday today. We're talking about the Sens and the Brinkat. Igor Sokolov is 23 today.
Okay, yeah.
You think he's And I don't even know what it would draw, but he's a potential. He's going to need waivers next year. Is he a potential trade chip for the for the Sens this offseason?
No, there's no interest. I would assume he clears waivers, goes to the minors next year.
You think
year.
So?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. The only thing you look at him is the possibility of do you flip him out for another minor league player? As bullish as you might be on, if you look at his numbers and his calling card being a goal scorer. He hasn't done enough at the minor league level, JR, to draw any real interest. Also, a little point on Pooley, though, and again, always has great inside information. I was interested that he did comment on the Hockey Canada situation, that should wrap up pretty soon because...
Well, Bettman announced that on the weekend.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. I didn't see that. But, I mean, it really is. It pertains to, and certainly more importantly for the players that are have no involvement, to just kind of put this to bed. But for doing business, and, certainly, and I'm not saying anyone's guilty, but in the case of Carter Hart, first thing when I saw that name yesterday was, hey, your due diligence... It looked pretty foolish here to end up making a trade, and then all of a sudden, and I'm not just saying him, anybody that matter. I would assume, again, Hockey Canada did not allow these players to play at their own World Championships, represent their own country. If you're an NHL team, I'm not touching any of these players until I see that report.
Yeah, but yeah, Bill Daly said, I believe that the independent investigation is done and they expect to have the report. I think he used the term early in the summer.
Okay,
technically, yeah. Summer arrives in about 2 weeks. In fact, 2 weeks from today, I think.
Okay.
So, we're looking at end of this month, maybe early in July. So,
when I always think of summer in the NHL, I always think of after free agency.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, 8:56. We're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to come back. We'll hopefully hear from Rory McIlroy. About the merger of LIV Golf and the PGA. Huge, stunning story from yesterday. That's when we return right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.